Sylvia's Synergy Effect, brought to you by Synergy Home Care.
Getting back in the kitchen got mom back into life. After her stroke, she felt uncomfortable doing what she used to do. But with her Synergy caregiver, Emma, things changed. She got help at home and regained the confidence to get back to her old recipes. Now the hardest thing is getting mom to stop making her biscuits. So good.
We believe getting back to what you love can keep you moving forward. Find your Synergy Effect with Synergy Home Care.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at WeightWatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
For a year, the country has been told one version of this story here. The Celeste Rivas Hernandez gone missing, found gone and deceased in a trunk. Music star, David somehow connected to it, all of that. 13-year-old girl named Celeste Rivas Hernandez runs from her home. In Lake Elsinore, California, in April of 2024, she vanishes into the orbit of the rising alt-pop star named David, D4VD. A year and a half later, her remains are found in the front trunk of his abandoned Tesla at a Hollywood tow yard. That is the shape of the story on every magazine cover, every podcast, every viral edit on TikTok. Missing girl, famous suspect, tragic end. Right? There's one problem with that story. Celeste was actually not missing for most of it. She was at her cousin's high school graduation, allegedly, in May of 2024. She was on surveillance video, fighting with neighbors in her own backyard in September of 2024. She was, according to a family friend who had known her since kindergarten, back at her mother's house at least twice during the year before her body was found. Once she came by herself, once she was brought back by police, she was, by every available piece of evidence, coming and going, which means the central question of this case is not who took her. The central question is who was supposed to be keeping her home, watching her, parenting her, and why they couldn't. Here's a fast context for anyone just catching up. And I want to say this. I am not blaming her parents for her death. But that, I'm sorry, is a large missing piece to this whole equation. She's missing. And she wasn't. She really wasn't. They just never said they found her, is the way it appears to be. So why is she on such a loose leash? She's a child. She doesn't have autonomy to go wander around her city or the country at her own will. She's a effing child. So before he was like, well, she's got rights. She's a child. You know who has rights? You know who actually has not rights? Responsibilities? Parents. Parents that are supposed to be taking care of their child. They have responsibilities. And you know what? You lose rights when you don't take care of your responsibilities. And I think that might be an area that should be looked at here. Because when this is going on, and yes, children run away, and it's horrible, and it's tragic, and all of that. But I'm sorry. She wasn't just gone into the ether for like a year with the pop star. She was coming and going. Where was the parenting? Well, they were immigrants. Well, they were working. Well, I don't effing care. I don't care where you're from. I don't care where you're going. I don't care about any of it. You're a parent. You have a child. None of the rest matters. The rest is noise. You figure that shit out. Well, it's really hard, Tony. You know what it's like being a single parent? The F I don't. I am one. I've been one. For a long time, with no help. It's me. I get it. Well, it's you struggle. Yeah, been there too. Been there too. It's been a long road getting to where I've gotten to. And at the end of the day, there's excuses, there's this, there's that. Two things, parent, child. You can't parent, you shouldn't have the child. Unfortunately, that's the lesson that, you know, I think probably 70 to 80% of American parents find themselves in, of like, oh, you know, it's not optional. I'm sorry, for those of us parents who do parent, it's not an optional thing. Believe it or not, it's not. As much as some people like to make it that way, or think it is, or have excuses for it, because of this, because of that, again, I don't effing care. I've heard so many excuses around this story, as we skirt around this piece of it. I'm sure she was probably a hellion to deal with. It seems kind of like it. Guess what, Mom and Dad? Hard of being a parent. You don't know what you're going to get. There's no manual, and they're all different. But it's yours now. She's been yours for 13 years. And, you know, figure it out. Figure it out. Sorry, that's my little soapbox rant as a parent looking at this story going, where the hell's Mom and Dad? I'm sick of the excuses on this story. I just am. Because when it comes down to it, like I said, there is no excuse when it comes to the life and death of your child. Well, she's got a boyfriend. He's old. Like, then why? She's a child. Again, you have responsibilities. Yes, no, you can do this. You can't do that. You're not allowed to do this. You're not leaving the house. There will be consequences if you do. I know it's not that easy. I get it. But this, I don't know. This feels like, and I don't know. I have no idea. Hands thrown up in the air. I don't know. It was an utter failure on their part. Utter failure of parenting. Period. Maybe that's mean. Maybe that's cruel. Maybe the end result is the same. If that area, if that mode of her life had been stable, had safety, had had a reason for her not to run away, she'd probably still be alive. So I think one of the greater questions is, why was she running away? Kids do it. Yeah, there's usually a motive, a reason. And I don't know what that motive is or that reason. But again, I'm thinking it's something that should be looked at, considering there's still children over there. Call me crazy. Here's the fast context for anyone that's catching up. David Anthony Burke, known professionally as David, D4VD, was arrested on April 16th of 2026 on suspicion of murder in the death of Celeste Rivas Hernandez. He's being held without bail. His attorneys have publicly denied any involvement, stating that the evidence will show he did not do any of this, so that he did not murder her. He was not the cause of her death. That's a statement from the attorneys. He's not been, at least as of this recording, has not been indicted, and no criminal complaint has been filed. By the time you're watching this, that might be changed. Either way, he's presumed innocent under the law, and I'm not giving him a free pass at all in any of this. Law enforcement sources have also indicated that more than one person may have been involved in her death and the disposal of her body, and additional arrests remain possible. That is the case everyone is covering. That is the story heading to a courtroom. This one here that we're about to get into further is different. This one is about the year before the Tesla, because that is where the story actually lives, and almost nobody is telling it. So your thoughts in the comments as we go through this Substack and YouTube. The links are there in the description. Consider what the public recording already shows, or the public record already shows, I should say. 3 missing person reports in 14 months, 11 sheriff's department visits to the Rivas Hernandez family home, a 7th grader who was not enrolled in any school for roughly a year, an ex-boyfriend on the record saying she was telling friends she wanted out, a next-door neighbor of almost 3 years who has never met the family. That is the portrait of the David story, quietly existing in the ether, that the David part of the story is quietly covering up, not intentionally, just because it doesn't get noise, because people don't want to lift up that fiber of this mattress and go, ooh, what's under here? It's harder, it's sadder, and it's slower than the famous suspect and the gruesome crime scene, but it's a big part of this story. Let's start with the sheriff's calls. Between February 24 and April 25, Riverside County Sheriff's deputies were called to Celeste's home 11 times. Most were logged as minor crime investigation. At least one was logged as suspicious circumstances. 4 produced official reports. 3 got follow-ups. On March 19th and 24 alone, deputies came 3 times in a single day. That was the same day Celeste was caught on a local liquor store's surveillance camera, running down her own street at 7 in the morning without her belongings. The same day her sister walked into that same liquor store looking for her. Roughly 1 sheriff's call a month to the one address is not a quirky neighborhood. That is a household in sustained crisis. The public record does not tell us the specifics of those calls. The volume tells us what we need to know about the weather inside that house, in my opinion. Then there's Damian Hernandez, 15 years old, who previously dated Celeste and went on the record with reporters. His words, not an interpretation. This is his words. Her parents were, quote, mean. Now, take it for what it's worth. He's 15. She, quote, didn't like them, unquote. She talked about running away to friends openly, even jokingly, for months before she actually did it. Nobody took her seriously, he said, until she ran 3 times, until the 3rd time she didn't come back. And again, this is important because, yes, kids do these things sometimes. Do they always have the most justifiable reasons for it? No, they don't. But sometimes they do. A lot of times they do. And we're far more interested as a society in making them the villain for being the bad person. Running away, bad, 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 bad child. You shouldn't be. Why are they running away? Because I'll tell you what, happy, healthy kids aren't running away. So what's behind that? What's making them unhappy? What's making them unhealthy? I can guarantee it's more than just you can't use your phone. I can guarantee there's something a little deeper and darker going on than just parental borders that are being put up, in my opinion. I mean, do you have the sporadic case every now and then, the outlier, whether it's just there's something wrong mentally going on and the kid runs? Yeah, sure. But it ain't the majority. I don't know what this one is, but it certainly deserves a hard look. Again, like I said, there's still kids in that household. There's still parents parenting,
quote unquote. The same quality parenting that kept Celeste Rivas Hernandez from not running away three times and ending up dead in somebody's trunk. That type of parenting. A 13-year-old who is telling her friend she wants to disappear is not joking. She's taking a survey. She's asking whether anyone will stop her. Every adult in her life, including the adults she was asking, missed the question. Now consider what the people on the other side of the fence saw, or rather did not see. The family's next-door neighbor who told News Nation she had lived there since February of 2023. She said she had never once met the family in almost 3 years. She did not know their name. She did not know how many people lived in the house. Her own backyard bordered there. She could not hear, or she could hear Celeste sometimes through the walls. This is what isolation looks like when it's happening right next to you and you never learn to see it. A family in suburban California, a child yelling in the backyard, a woman on the other side of the fence who could not have told you the last name of anyone she was listening to. The piece nobody is pressing, the school. Celeste attended Lakeland Village School in Lake Elsinore through the seventh grade. She ran in April of 24. Investigators believe she died in the spring of 25. That is, at a minimum, one full school year, during which a 13-year-old California resident was enrolled, as far as the public record shows, nowhere. California law is clear on this. Education is mandatory through age 18. But go, if you want to see a great California's education system is, look at how many children were enrolled pre-COVID and look how many came back after. Look at the thousands that are missing. Missing, just gone, not accounted for anywhere. So it is rather understandable, not acceptable, but understandable how one could easily just slip through the cracks just because thousands of others have too, and nobody seems to care. School districts are required to track chronic absence. Districts are required to report missing students. Child Protective Services is supposed to be looped in on children who disappear from the education system. Child Protective Services also, in theory, is supposed to be staffed. It's supposed to have people that can actually carry out the duties of it in an effective manner. That doesn't exist. Lake Elsinore Unified School District, in a statement to the Los Angeles Times, confirmed a student who had attended their schools through seventh grade had died. They called it heartbreaking. They offered grief counseling for the kid who hadn't been there in like a year. Let's pretend we care. They did not publicly answer the question that ought to be asked out loud. Who was tracking the seventh grader after she did not come back the following August? This is a story of so many failures on so many parts of so many systems at the end of the day. It really is. Obviously, however she died, you got that. But how she got there is 90% of the story. If anybody was tracking her, what did they find? If nobody was, that is a different failure, and it belongs in this story. Other than just the dark-feeling pop star connected to death, how did she get there? This does not stop at one family in one California town. Sean Johnson, the director of youth services at Operation Safe House in Riverside County, told a local outlet, KESQ, that post-pandemic chronic runaways are spiking in the region. Celeste Rivas Hernandez was not an outlier. She was a data point in a pattern nobody is paying attention to, unless the pattern ends in a Tesla trunk and a famous suspect attached to it. Yeah, she's just one we're talking about because it's connected to that guy. Thousands more are out there with stories just as horrible that there's no way in hell there is time to tell every single one of them. Now, the part of the story that actually twists itself again is this. The family's public face and the documented record are not telling the same story. Publicly, the grief is real, and it is devastating. The brother, Matthew Rivas, posted on Celeste's reactivated Instagram account that the family did everything they could. Did they? His words, flyers at her school, posts on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook, calls to police, family searching everywhere, even extended family in Mexico sharing and praying, and that's all great. What about the lead up?
What about the lead up? What was going on that made all of this possible? That is my question. I don't question your grief. I don't question your sadness. I don't question the pain and the hurt and the heartbreak. But you know what?
There's a reason she ran away. There's a reason this took place. And the story is not the reaction. The story is what led to it. So before I jump on the bandwagon of sorrow and sadness here, let me take a closer look and point some fingers, because some fingers need to be pointed. And questions need to be asked. And until they're answered sufficiently with sufficient answers, I think there's a very real question about responsibility here in parenting and capabilities of doing so. And if these capabilities were not able to be met, why? And there ain't a lot of acceptable answers other than you're incapacitated and in the hospital and can't be there for your child. If you're breathing, if you're getting up out of bed every day, no excuses. Why? Because that's what it is to be an effing parent. There's just no excuses. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care where you're from. I don't care where you're going. I don't care what language you speak. I don't care any of it. Don't care. Don't care. Don't care. Don't care. Don't care. You have a child. That is yours. That is your responsibility. Figure it out. I'm sure the home is sad. Brother says it's quiet and broken. Neighbors and family and friends have confirmed they saw the family walking the streets that summer with flyers asking if anyone had seen Celeste. Again, that grief is not performance. It is not manufactured for cameras. It is a family that has lost a child in the most horrific way imaginable. But the record sits uncomfortably next to that grief, and it deserves to be read out loud. Steve Fisher is a licensed private investigator hired by the landlord of the Hollywood Hills house David was renting. He has been aggressively and publicly pulling on threads. Nobody else has been really digging to the level that he has. On October 26 to 25, Fisher posted on his own account that the first time Celeste was reported missing, February 14th to 24, was the exact same day David's manager, Josh Marshall, took possession of the rental house where David was living. That is Fisher's allegation, not an independent confirmation fact. And he is on the record with it. Fisher has also said that according to a source close to the situation in Lake Elsinore, certain family members allegedly instructed concerned neighbors to stop searching for Celeste, telling them she was staying with a family member near Los Angeles. Quote, that's his claim. His theory, stated as theory, is that the family may have feared a formal Child Protective Services investigation if they told authorities what was actually going on. Don't want those Child Protective Services people coming in and taking a look at how you're raising your kids and your runaway that keeps running away and you still got others that are living here. Maybe there's a reason they're running away. Maybe there's something going on. Maybe. I don't know. That's Fisher's theory anyway. It's not a proven fact, and it is being presented here as his allegation. It's certainly an open question. Again, I'm not saying that there's anything criminal or anything like that going on with the parenting of Celeste or her parents or her family. I'm saying we don't know the answer. I'm saying at the least, what we have here is parents that are derelict in their duty of being a parent. There's really no other way of putting it. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it to make somebody feel good. It is what it is. Then there's the piece that is harder to look away from, the verified GoFundMe that has been raising money for Celeste's family, the public face of the grief, the formal expression of a community rallying around them. It's organized by her cousin, Esmeralda Lozano, GoFundMe has publicly confirmed that the money is going directly to the family. Esmeralda Lozano is also the same cousin that Steve Fisher has openly, publicly by name, asked whether she attended an event with Celeste and David on April 21st of 2024. That's 16 days after Celeste was reported missing for the first time. Or for the last time, rather. The same cousin whose high school graduation Fisher claims Celeste attended on May 30th, 2024, photo allegedly in his possession. Fisher has asked her directly why Celeste was showing up at her graduation while officially classified as a runaway and apparently enrolled in no school. Was she missing? Because it appears she kind of wasn't. Kind of there, kind of on the ether, kind of 13. Going around and doing this. I mean, she's a kid. She's a kid. She's a kid. I mean, yeah, some kids grow up quicker than others. They're still a kid. You still got to be a parent there. I'm sure that Celeste grew up in the school of hard knocks. Probably led quite a life, probably had a bit more maturity for her age than others, I'm guessing, because she had to, because she had no choice, because that was the environment that she came up in. Parents are still alive. She's still 13. What are we missing here, parents? The parenting part. The parenting part. Again, let me be absolutely and completely clear here. Esmeralda Lozano has not been charged with anything. I'm not saying she's doing anything wrong, and I'm not saying this GoFundMe is wrong. Maybe this family does need some funding to figure things out and get themselves on their feet. I'm not trying to shit on that. But I am not going to sit here and keep covering this story and pretend that this is not a giant screaming red flag that is a part of this story. She's not been accused of anything. Organizing a GoFundMe for a family member who has died is not a sign of guilt. I'm not saying it at all. It's an act of love. She deserves, as every person in this story deserves, some grace. She's the one that's been coming out and telling some stories and talking. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to line up with the whole story of being missing, and it gives us more context. Into a window of a life that was clearly in chaos for Celeste. The collision in the record of this story is real and it is unavoidable. The public grief of this family and the open, unanswered questions about this family are coming out of the same household. That contradiction deserves to be named because the alternative is pretending it does not exist. And this case has already had enough of that. Two things can be true at the same time. A family can love a child and still not have been a safe place that she needed. Yeah. A family can grieve publicly and still have known more than the public posture suggests. Neither cancels out the other. Both belong in the story. And anyone else who's out there listening or watching going, oh, this sounds familiar. Okay. Time to reframe and readjust your life if this is hitting too close to home, especially if you're the parent. David has been arrested. A grand jury has heard testimony from his mother, his father, his brother, his daily manager, his friend. LAPD has said others may face charges. That story will play out in courtrooms over the next several years. With all the lawyers and motions and presumptions and procedural delays the justice system demands. But the other story, the Celeste story, the real one, the one no network is putting on or a podcast is covering, is not waiting in a courtroom. It is already in the public record. It is in the TMZ reports and the News Nation segments. It is in the 11 sheriff's visits. It's in the ex-boyfriend's on-camera interviews. It's in the Los Angeles Times quotes from neighbors and family friends. It's in Steve Fisher's documented social media posts. It's been sitting there this whole time. It's just that almost nobody wants to read it out loud because it means sitting with something uglier than a famous suspect in a horrific crime scene. It means sitting with the fact that before the Hollywood Hills ever heard Celeste Rivas Hernandez's name, her own neighbor had already logged her as a chronic runaway. Her school had already lost her. Her mother had already, by the mother's own words to TMZ, not seen her since April of 24. Her ex-boyfriend already heard her say out loud that she wanted out. Her cousin, according to one investigator's documented public allegations, had already been with her and David at events before she was even officially reported missing for the last time. The adults around Celeste did not fail her at the end. They failed her from the beginning. The Tesla was the last stop on a road that started a very long time before. Celeste Rivas Hernandez did not vanish from a safe home. She ran from a home she had already told her friends she wanted to leave. She slipped past 11 sheriff's visits, a school district, a social services net, a neighborhood of adults, and a family that was publicly searching, according to at least one investigator's allegations, not looking hard in private, apparently. She ended up in the trunk of a Tesla in the Hollywood Hills. But the truth is she had been falling through the floor in Lake Elsinore for a very long time before she ever got into the frunk. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. Sorry, this is what it is. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean or cruel, but Jesus. You failed. This is a major failure. And bad parenting, part of the story, in my opinion. And it needs to be called out. Your thoughts in the comment section. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
David Anthony Burke is facing the most serious charges the Los Angeles County DA's office can bring. That David, D4VD. First-degree murder, special circumstances, a possible death sentence. His defense team says he didn't cause Celeste's death, and that they've said it in language that sounds like they already know what the evidence actually shows, which is interesting. We do not. Fighting the charges is heavy in a case this public with a 14-year-old victim. It's a different kind of war that they're walking into. Blair Burke's statement, which is David's attorney, saying he's innocent in a vague sense, but he did not cause her death. That's the specifics of what the verbiage is. If the defense already knows the cause of death from sealed autopsy findings, which they probably do, then they're confident that it helps them. Bob Mata, defense attorney, is with us to help break all this down. Bob, what kind of alternative explanation could that language be setting up there, that he did not cause her death? Not he's innocent, he did not cause her death from a defense standpoint.
I mean, it's very carefully worded, right? Yeah. So I think when they're saying he didn't cause her death, they're saying it wasn't by his hand specifically. Mm-hmm. I think that he was the one who was the architect of the murder, though. So meaning that somebody else did the dirty work. But much like in any case where if you hire a hitman, you didn't actually cause the death per se, is mm-hmm. ends up being the person who committed the crime and actually killed the person. But you're just as responsible under the eyes of the law as the person who pulled the trigger or used the knife, whatever the mode of the murder was. So it's interesting, you know, and the other part of it is kind of the premeditation aspect of it. And, you know, like lay people, a lot of times I think confuse what premeditation mm-hmm. might mean, thinking that you really have to be planning this thing out for an extended period of time. You know, that's just not the case with the law. I mean, it has been well established that premeditation can form in seconds.
Yeah. Essentially, if it went down kind of the way we're reading the tea leaves or the way it's being described, that she went into the house on the 23rd, I believe, and then never came back out, that she's dead because she was a threat to his image and his career, because the tea may spill to everybody about the relationship that was going on. That in itself, having all of those pieces built together. Does that add up to you? Does that make sense that all this could truly be what took place here in this situation between the two of them that night? That in the conversation, she said something to the effect of, well, I'll expose you. I'm just throwing randoms out here. And then he made a quick calculation, and that was premeditation. That calculation of, well, if she's going to do that, I should get rid of her. That would be premeditation, wouldn't it?
Oh, 100%. Well, yeah. And look at it this way. I mean, we don't know kind of the course of how this played out.
Yeah.
You know, this played out over months.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, she was gone for a long time. And frankly, lying in wait in and of itself is a form of premeditation.
Yeah.
If the prosecutors can show that David invited Celeste into his home knowing what was going to happen at the end of the day, that's premeditation. You know what I mean? Because, like, if he invited her in initially, you know, without her, like, maybe there was some kind of threat of an outcry, like, earlier on. And he's like, oh, shit. He's like, I got to handle this. And he invites her into the house knowing, like, I can't, like, invite her into my house and then, like, the next day she's dead, because that seems pretty sus. You know, so he's like, instead, I'm gonna bring her into the fold. I'm going to have her stay with me. And then, you know, one day she's going to show up dead somewhere else. Like, in his mind.
Does she ever even need to have made a threat of, I'm going to expose you? I mean, it would be pretty common knowledge to David that if word got out that he was doing inappropriate things with a child, that would probably end his career. It doesn't necessarily need a message from the victim going, hey, by the way, this might destroy you. If he just he knows this, anyone would know this, that could be the cause and effect of this sort of scenario, of this situation, that he's allegedly having this relationship with this girl. She doesn't have to say boo. Could it just be at some moment in time he weighs the risk and goes, my album's about to come out, I got a world tour that's coming up, the last thing I want is for this kind of information to drop. And he just makes the decision one day of, like, she's too much of a liability, she loves him, everything's great, maybe there's, like, nothing that she says that she's gonna expose him, but he just knows damn well people will figure out what's going on and that will destroy him. Just him connecting those dots, is that enough to describe those charges?
Yeah, I think ultimately it is. Yeah. It's not optimal. I mean, you'd rather have it the other way because it's more compelling. You know, but this kind of, like, dovetails back into what Robin was talking about with, like, you know, your Diddy or Kanye, where they have huge money, you know, because, like, those guys typically handle these types of issues with money. You know, they pay people off to keep quiet, you know, and then they continue to pay them off to keep them quiet. This, as we've discussed, I don't think was really an option for him because he didn't have that kind of money. So ultimately, though, at the end of the day, I don't think that they need any kind of actual proof of an outcry because they can make the argument, you know, exactly the argument that I just made. Him paying her off wasn't the option. The only option he really had was to get rid of her.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be an interesting challenge for the prosecution on this, and I'm going to try to channel a little bit of my inner Bob now on defense side, and that is, you know, there's no reps of really crazy behavior. And granted, I know music industry and everything, but I mean, when I try to do all the research on everyone in this circle, to go from it, to my optic, they're going from 0 to 100 on healthy interactions, healthy-ish, you know, with this up-and-coming star, to murder, death. I think, you know, I'm just putting myself in, you know, projecting forward. If they don't plead out and it's on a jury and they're trying to show premeditation and the prosecution's saying, I mean, they got to overcome for a jury beyond reasonable doubt with everyone that everyone that was involved in this in a circle had a clean record. There's been no prior charges, no history of violence recorded, as we know yet, at least as I know from my research, to all of a sudden they want to murder her to protect the image.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a stretch unless there's more in there that they can throw in there, like with text messages and things like that, because from the optic I see right now, it still looks like an accidental, stupid 20-year-old dumb shit going on and them trying to cover it up, because it's hard behaviorally for me to see why they would take that action, and they thought it was in their best interest when a lot of people knew she was going to this house, seeing him, and that they thought it was a great idea. Granted, prefrontal lobe's not fully formed yet, but someone along that path said it's a great idea to kill her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're putting logic into it.
And, I said, that's why you never know.
Which I appreciate, man. But, I mean, you make a great point at the same time. But, you know, a lot of times in these situations, and like you said, we're not talking about a fully developed prefrontal cortex yet. And, you know, you're dealing with, like, a bunch of guys that are in the same boat. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where they're not sitting there as, like, kind of a, you know, mastermind think tank in terms of how to handle this situation. They're a bunch of kids, for, you know, lack of better.
which I think makes a great point too, Bob, is that because I don't think any one individual would be capable of this, it would actually have to be a group mentality of collective stupid that yep. said this was a great idea. And so I think it's hard to imagine just multiple charges. It's one person being guilty of being involved in this, just because it's, and also, I mean, just the stats on dismembering a body requires at least two people as well.
100%. And you're exactly right. And that goes back to that conversation we were having about, you know, people flipping, you right. know, and how is that going to sit with the public? How is that going to sit with the jury in terms of, all right, they decided to hang it on the dude with the dough, but, you know, we've got a crew, like an entourage,
right.
you know, that's basically walking on this thing because they all flipped, even though it's pretty clear they all had a hand on it or in this thing.
Right.
And, you know, to me, the biggest problem for the state in this case is going to be the decomposition of the body.
Yeah.
You know, because that ultimately, they're not going to be able to tell that jury exactly how she died.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was strangulation, totally. Blunt force, I mean, poison, they just don't know,
right.
you know, and they're not going to be able to. So, I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, they have to prove that she died unlawfully, you know, and that he right. caused it, and that, you know, that he had formed the intent to do it before he did it, you know, so that it wasn't a heat of the moment type thing. So
it's definitely, it's going to be digital, man. It's
gotta be
there, I think.
It looks
like you said, somebody flipped.
Yeah.
Like,
combination.
You know what I mean? That's, like, to me, that's more important than the digital evidence.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, yes, I mean, we see it every day on social media. People do stupid shit. You see people filming their own crimes all the time. I mean, it's like unbelievable. I'm like, what is that dude doing, man?
Well, the digital gave him who to talk to and gave him the weak links to attack first.
Right.
And so that's where it gave you the leakage of, all right, we need to go for this guy, and this guy that they would otherwise been completely unaware of. You know, anytime you're trying to learn the secrets of any nation, you know, and you're trying to recruit a spy or flip someone, like in some of the work I did, the easiest thing is not to try to recruit the spy. You recruit the guy taking out the trash because they're actually carrying out the shit that everyone actually knows, and everyone
right.
totally, they're oblivious to everyone. You know, right. they're invisible. So you go for the invisible people first.
Always.
To that entourage.
Always. And then, I mean, the reality of that situation, again, that is the easiest flip in the history of flipping, because yep. you're dealing with young guys that are like, your life hangs in the balance right here. Like, whatever you decide to do in this moment in time is going to set your course for the rest of your days. And you have a choice, and your choice is to go down with the ship, and that ship is sinking, or you can help us.
And with an LA homicide detective with 20, 30, sometimes 40 years of reps of these types of interviews going against a 20-year-old who it's their first time, I wonder who's going to come out ahead on the interview strategy.
I'm wondering about this because it feels like the defense of David is already somewhat in a corner by the way that they're verbing things. Basically, it's bad, but it's not that bad. Is kind of what I think they may be facing if they end up in a trial here at some point. Aside from David pleading guilty, which I don't foresee that happening, is there a world here, Bob, where there may be some sort of a plea deal reached? Obviously, there's so many more things that need to happen before we even get there. But just kind of predicting the future as best we can with the blocks that we have in our playground. Is there a world where that could take place here, where maybe he would plead to some lesser charges? Would the DA even offer that? Would they even want that? Or if they're going through already and grandstanding the way that they are, saying, we got all this, would they even want to go that? Or is it, no, we're taking this to court, you're going down. Either you admit to it all or we're taking you all the way down ourselves.
The easy answer to that is we don't know until the defense attorney sees the evidence.
Yep.
You know, because I mean, that's when you know what they've got.
Sure.
Because at this point, it's all just grandstanding by both sides. States out there saying we've got a slam dunk case and defense saying, well, my guy didn't do it. Good luck proving it. And, you know, once the discovery starts flowing in and you start to see what they have, that's when you start having a serious conversation with your client. You know, I mean, if it looks like they have the ability to be able to prove this case up in a way that is going to convince a jury that he did this beyond a reasonable doubt, then you're having a very real conversation with your client and saying, look, you know, you're in trouble here, you know, and you need to really think about it. Do you want me to go and try to get them to take the death penalty off the table in order to spare your life? Or do you want to go in and fight it? If you know, the state is of the position that they're not going to budge on the death penalty, well, then they're going to go to trial on it, because at that point, your job becomes less about, you know, proving innocence or guilt. It becomes about saving your client's life in terms of the death penalty. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to put the fight up. So I don't know. I mean, it just depends on what they have on them, you know, It's kind of a fascinating case in that sense, because you really just don't know how they were able to build the case because of the condition of the body. You know what I'm saying? And like, you don't really even know when she died, you know? So it's like, you've got that thing, like, where if they're going to come in and say, well, that happened the night of, well, how the hell do you know? Mm-hmm. Like, how are you going to prove that up? Is your medical examiner going to be able to come in and prove the time of death? And they're not going to be able to. Right. You know, just because they don't know.
Again, if the digital, pure speculation, we don't know, but they have the date now. They're saying the 23rd or something of when in the house didn't come out. I'm going to guess it must be digital. There must be something digital.
And also the Tesla's data.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to guess there's something there that gives them a much better timeline on what took place by the reactions and the communications of those around her in those moments. That's going to be real fascinating.
And it'll probably all be after the fact shit.
Yeah,
true. You know what I'm saying? Like, not the planning and the execution of the execution, but really the how do we get rid of the body type stuff? Like, where are you at now? What are we going to do? Did you go get all the stuff that happened after it, which really kind of makes for a stronger case for the the mutilation of human remains, false statements, tampering with evidence type charges. Mm-hmm. Like, even if they're not able to nail him on the homicide itself, which remains a possibility because of the issues of, you know, that we've been talking about, just the decomposition of the body and, you know, the ability to kind of pinpoint a time in which it happened, are going to be serious hurdles that the state's going to have to overcome. But at the end of the day, he's not walking on all of it. It's kind of like that before the Robert Durst, you know, they started nailing him and he had that case down in wherever it was, in Texas, and they couldn't get him on the homicide. And he basically was like, yeah, you know, I was around the body, but they got him on the mutilation of human remains, you know what I mean? And that was the only thing that they could convict him on, because it was very similar circumstances. In that case, the condition of the body was just so deteriorated that they couldn't make heads or tails of when the person died, how they died, none of it, you know. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that causation aspect in terms of the homicide charge is something that they have to prove up.
Interestingly, I just looked it up as we were talking about it. Teslas do record the opening and closing of the frunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think they record if you touch the damn thing.
If you breathe. Yeah. How many breaths you took.
Current sperm count.
Another lesson of killers. If you're going to murder someone, don't put it in a super vehicle that's going to record everything you do.
Yeah. Don't pick the vehicles of the future. That's not a good choice. Go with a Pinto or something like that. You know, go with the Geo Metro. Those work.
Acer.
Acer. Gremlin.
Yeah. Your thoughts.
All AMC vehicles.
Showing our age right there.
Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and do press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at WeightWatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.